Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Okay.
This is Penn Sunday School, and to our listening ears, all angels sing and round us rings the music of the sweet.
Here we go.
Hola, 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 brothers, sisters, siblings. Welcome to Penn Sunday School. I'm Matt Donnelly, and of course, we have Pondro here.
Yeah, I'm here.
This is a bank episode. We're recording with Pondro while he's here in town, getting as much knowledge and wisdom and life stories out of him as possible so that we can all be better people. Here he is, Preach the Love, Penn Jillette.
Preaching love with my good, good friend, Pondro. And of course, Matt Donnelly, another one of my two of my good friends.
It's, you don't have to, if you feel guilty and you don't bring me in.
It wasn't for pity. It was just the truth. Just the truth. And Hondo's here. And we what's interesting, maybe, is that while we're doing this as a bank show,
yes,
we might use this the week that we are actually performing in Valencia.
Wow.
So there you go. One of the reasons we need these bank shows.
It's because of that.
Going to Valencia to do a show.
Yeah.
Maybe we are having a great success.
Maybe.
Or a great failure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
maybe
interesting.
Maybe it'll be so weird that you said my great, great friend Hondro after you had such a fiery, angry battle in rehearsals where you.
Yeah. That boy, it's an important recording because here they are talking, whereas it was that Saturday night that Hondro killed Penn on stage.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it's fortunate that Penn was American or Hondro would have gone to prison. Because they've got that rule where you can kill Americans.
In Spain, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here you are, Hondro. You are working with Penn and Teller.
Yeah.
And we're writing bits for the for the next season to Fool Us. You are one of the very, 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 very few people, the only one, who's actually written bits for Penn and Teller that go into the show very close to how you wrote them. We make changes, but some we made a lot of changes, but some we made few. And you've written those and put them in the show. You're the only one.
Oh.
And others try. You know, we've had other people give us bits and they don't seem to have an understanding. But you are just fabulous at understanding the Penn and Teller stuff. And, of course, your knowledge of magic is so so overwhelming. You just know so much about it. So when you go back to Spain and they say, what the fuck were you doing over in the USA? What do you tell them?
Playing with a drone. I say, I have fun. We think ideas. We eat. Yes. And have fun. That's what I say.
I'd say it's been around Hondro working with you. I think one thing that's fascinating is that Hondro builds his own props and builds his own stuff.
And he does. He gets all crafty on us.
Yeah.
He'll ask for a popsicle stick and two magnets and some glue and bingo.
And I think like that's why working with your team that he's not just some highfalutin consultant just barking out, you know, moving heaven and earth. He'll then turn to Nate and other people to kind of just put this on this and just put this on this and put it here. And he'll often participate in the, trying to construct things.
I think if you try to build your mock-ups, you say, the first things, you organize also your brain and you see if you are going in the right direction or not. And for me, it helps because sometimes I see the problem or I found a different way to go.
Mm-hmm.
So it helps.
Doesn't help me at all.
Yeah. For me, yes. For me, a lot. A lot.
But, you know, I you can really see that the Penn & Teller organization, we have different roles.
Yes, of course.
You know, I work
I still don't know yours. I don't know your role, but I've seen the rest.
Everybody else is working.
Yeah.
But you can't tell what I'm doing.
I guess you are the meditation guy there because the others do things and you are there.
I sit.
Yeah.
I sit. Yes. I bring a certain calm to the group.
Yes. But yeah, everyone has a different thing to do.
And I never asked you this, but do you have any other skills besides magic? I mean, you like me, you went into show business young, right?
Yes, yes. I it's the only thing I know how to do. Mm-hmm. Or not, but it's the only thing. It's the only thing. No, I do comedy, magic, write. All for me, it's all the same.
Mm-hmm, sure.
All the same. And so when they tell me, what do you do for a living? I don't know what I have to
showbiz.
Answer.
Showbiz.
Yeah, showbiz.
Yeah.
In Spain, it's strange to say that. So when they ask me, what do you do? I don't know. I don't have an answer.
You know, just trying to get an understanding of the United States is so goddamn big.
Yeah.
You know, but someone like Fido.
Yeah.
Who is now your good friend.
Mm-hmm.
Fido's kind of very close to Bruce Springsteen in Spain. Now, does Fido play South America?
I don't know. Maybe he has, because many, many rock stars from Spain have gone there. Yeah.
But
not the US. Because I've invited him to your house.
Yeah.
Yes, I told him. But he doesn't want to come here.
Does he have a thing against the United States?
No, but the language.
Mm-hmm.
But I told him, Ben invites you to his house and say, thank you, but what do I do in Vegas?
Now, what I'm thinking of is he is the biggest music star in Spain now?
For me, yes. I mean, of the old school, maybe. Mm-hmm. You know, now we have other rhythms and younger people, but from the old ones, at least I think he's one of the most that people love him.
Yeah, very similar to Springsteen.
Yeah.
Is his name Raul? What is the name?
Fito. Fito and Fittipaldis, it's the group.
Yeah.
Fito and the Fittipaldis?
Yeah, it's good, eh?
All right.
Yeah.
So good. You know, I talked about that a lot on the show.
Yeah.
How incredibly impressed I was with the show. And how you don't usually have that good a rock and roll based in kindness.
Wow.
Just doesn't happen.
I saw the show twice, one with you the first time, and then I went with my family, and he continued kissing everyone and giving hugs, and it was great.
Yeah, he's so pleasant and so sweet. And I think, from what I've read and listened to his records, has a rather rough background.
Yes.
But kind of rose above that.
Yes, drugs and...
You could see him as a guy who would play it as a tough guy and an asshole, but he came out of the way, he came out another way.
Yeah.
A way that kind of nobody else did in rock and roll.
Yes.
Came out a beautiful way. But what I'm saying is, you can be a superstar just in Spain. A person can be a superstar just in Spain. Even though Spain is so much smaller than the U.S., it can certainly support superstars that don't play outside of Spain, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Hondro can play stadiums.
I like until 1,000 people. Mm-hmm. That's because if not for me, I need people near me.
Uh-huh.
I'm not comfortable in big areas. So theater.
So the world has been kind to you.
Yeah, very kind. But I don't do stadiums because I don't do illusions. I don't do. I do comedy, and I want the people to be very near. I don't like people to see me on the screen if they are alive.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I was going for a different place there. So Fido, who plays stadium of 15 or 20,000, Taylor Swift tours the whole world.
Yeah.
Every place. And most people tour like all of Europe. But Fido seems to be a superstar in Spain.
Yeah.
Which is pretty great. Because he's a national treasure in Spain and works all the time in Spain.
Yes.
And yet does he play France? Does he play?
I don't think so. I will search, but I don't think he goes, maybe South America, but not Europe.
Yeah, that's kind of nice.
And now he could do big stadiums, but now he's doing the small theaters because he loves music.
Yeah.
He doesn't do it just for the money like others. He does it for the people, for the fans. And wow, that's great.
Yeah. So many people seem to lose interest in what they love and don't really hold on to it. And it's nice that Fido's really seems to enjoy playing music.
Yes. Yes. But not only Fito, I think there are people that performers that they love performing. Mm-hmm. And there are others that love only the money of mm-hmm. performing. So yeah. That's the difference that you feel with Fito. When we saw him, it was the first concert so they had, you know, technical problems. They did the ear.
Monitors, yeah.
Yeah. But people noticed it and that make us love him more.
Mm-hmm.
Other one would have got very angry, you know, and Fito just went.
Well, you know, I said this before, but we went backstage.
Yeah.
And stagehands.
Yes.
You know, stagehands are saying, and this is mind-blowing, man. Stagehands are saying to us, they've been working there for 30 years, never saw a band treated better and happier.
Wow.
They said they come in every day rehearsing. It's like a family.
Yes.
They couldn't get over it. The stagehand said, not once was there an unkind word spoken by anyone in the band, anyone else.
Yeah, yeah.
They were there for a week.
Yes, yes.
I mean, you can't even believe that, right? It's just.
No, I mean, it's literally like, that's actually like, it's so, it's just like, it's anti-music culture.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Totally, totally. That's why Ben didn't believe what he was seeing on stage.
Yeah.
Yeah, because like bands fighting is like all we talk about or
right,
care about.
Right.
Whether you're talking about like Don Henley.
And even someone who's a working class person, like Bruce Springsteen, who that's his image, does not treat his crew particularly well.
I've heard all different stories.
And I tell this story a lot, but it was a really important moment to me when I saw Springsteen do one of the stadium shows. He finished with his guitar,
yeah.
Took it off and threw it mm-hmm. to a stagehand who was probably yeah. 10 yards away. And it was a really bad throw. And the stagehand was like diving for it, and Springsteen was furious. Now, he could have been furious at his bad throw,
yeah.
But it looked like he was furious at the stagehand for not catching it.
Yeah.
And I was in the audience going, excuse me, as a professional juggler, yeah. which I was at the time, that was a bad throw.
Yeah.
It was not the person catching it that was problems.
Wow.
Yeah. In Spain, are you allowed to object in the middle of a concert and say, excuse me, and have the whole
Yes, of course, we are very polite.
Now, this just crossed my mind when I was talking about throwing things off stage. Ricciardi, the magician?
The magician, Ricciardi and Ricciardi Jr.
Yeah, were they from Spain?
I don't think if they were Italian, I don't know, okay. Or Argentinian maybe, but they threw things.
Ricciardi, you ever heard of Ricciardi?
No.
Ricciardi was an insane magician. Ricciardi, we saw him at the Village Gate in New York. Teller and I saw him in about 74, 75. So it was not Ricciardi Jr., it was Ricciardi. Uh-huh. And, you know, Chris Angel.
Yeah.
Saw Ricciardi or Ricciardi Jr. when he was a child and changed his whole life. Wow. Ricciardi, one of the craziest performers ever seen on stage, because he had many things, but one of the things he did was every prop, he threw it off stage as violently and as hard as he could. And it was something to see. He would do a sword box, and every sword he pulled out, he would just throw off stage. And he had stagehands trying desperately to catch all the shit he would throw.
Yeah, yeah.
And he did a trick where he did a sawing of a woman. It was his daughter that he would saw in half. And it was an open sawing with her stomach visible. And he would cut her open and just guts would spill out.
Uh-huh.
And then the audience was invited to file up on stage by her cut open body.
Wow.
Right? And it was disgusting, heavy, and perfect. And he would end the show by saying, and I guess I'll spare you the accent, but the accent was intense.
Wow.
He would end the show by going, someone who came by said it was a trick. Of course it was a trick. Was it done well? Right? That was Ricciardi's big finish.
Wow.
And they would get stuff from slaughterhouses that was disgusting and just pour out the guts.
Ugh.
And more than once, he cut his daughter's stomach fairly badly doing the trick. Not bad enough to go to the hospital, but his tolerances were so slight that sometimes the saw would actually be against her. And supposedly everybody was so afraid of Ricciardi, they wouldn't even point it out to him.
Wow.
But was it done well?
Yeah.
Not tonight. No, you cut your daughter's stomach open.
Follow-ups. Fido is only playing in Spain this year.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
And the Ricciardis were Peruvian.
Peruvian.
Wow. Ooh,
Peruvian.
Wow. Wow, wow.
Those weak-stomached Peruvians.
Do you ever see Ricciardi or Ricciardi Jr.?
Not live. Ricciardi Jr., yeah, in videos.
Ah.
In videos. He had the great rhythm and the gestures, and I don't like
it. It was very fiery.
Yes,
The whole show was and loud music and throwing shit.
Yes,
and it was one of those things where the act was so perfect that you really believed he did not give a fuck about where he was throwing shit and if anybody could catch it and if it would hurt them. You really believe that. Now, you might have really believed it because it was true. There is that possibility. But there were stories of stagehands getting... He would pick up stuff. You'd say, well, he's done with that prop. He's certainly not going to throw it off stage. But he'd have like a big, big box, you know? And all the... You know how you pull a box apart?
Yeah.
And each side comes off?
Yeah.
And the person like lays that down?
Yeah.
Ah, throw the whole thing off stage.
Those big weird blades for zigzag boxes, right? Just chuck those.
Yes.
That's not a problem for Ricciardi.
No. That's the easiest thing to throw off stage.
You think the blade's dangerous going into that box? It's much more dangerous going off stage.
Yeah. Throwing big, heavy things into the wings. That was their gig. Using the internet without ExpressVPN is like passing a note in the class and having the teacher intercept it and read it to everyone. No one else has to know about your secret crush on Stacy's mom. Whatever, you know, just you want your privacy is all I'm trying to say. Internet service providers know every single website you visit. ISPs can sell this information to ad companies and tech giants who then use the data to target you. ExpressVPN is pretty simple. It reroutes your network data through a secure encrypted tunnel so your ISP can't see or sell your online activity. It's really simple to use. Just click it. I'm using it a lot. I'm over in England now. I'm using it a lot in Manchester. So I can just visit stuff like they don't know where I am. That's really good. Rated number one by CNET and Tech Radar. I really like how easy it is to use, how it's just automatic, and I like that it gives me that privacy. Protect your online privacy by visiting expressvpn.com/pen today. That's expressvpn.com/pen. And you can get an extra three months free, expressvpn.com/pen. Check it out. Have some privacy. But, you know, Stacy's mom's kind of nice.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all-purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
So what magicians did you see? I mean, this all is going to come back to Juan Tamaris, but who did you see growing up that inspired you to do magic?
Of course, Juan. Okay, you know. Then we had one called Pepe Carroll. Did you know this one?
I've heard the name.
Pepe Carroll. Pepe Carroll, he was a world champion, fishing champion. He moved the cards like no one. He was like you, very tall, 2 meters tall, very long hands. And he was very close to Tamarit, very, very close to Tamarit. And he was a very shy person. In person, very, very shy. But
not one.
No, but on stage, he was, wow, greatest. And he was a great comedian, one-liners. He did one-liners. And he got famous in Spain, not for the magic, but because he hosted a show, a joke show.
Uh-huh.
And then they started knowing him. But he was one of the best card magicians ever in the world, Pepe Carro.
No. Once you say best card magician in Spain, you've said in the world.
Yes.
So Pepe Carroll, Juan Tamariz, Magic Andreu, another comedy magician.
How do you compare Pepe to Danny? Because many people listening saw Danny on Fool Us and thought that was beyond anything they'd ever seen.
It was different. For example, Danny does close-up. I mean, Pepe did more parlor. Mm-hmm. And the stuff Danny does is like count a number, think a card, and it's all that in that way. And Pepe Carroll was in another. He did a lot of gambling things.
A lot of handling.
Yeah, a lot of handling. He did dice, perfect routine. But he did, for example, the Chinese rings on stage. And he did a lot of comedy, and he was greatest comedian, magician.
Now, did you know him?
Yeah, 2 times. And I was with him twice, but then he got a depression. He got famous very soon. Well, not so soon, but
fast?
Quickly.
Yeah. And then some programs went down and he got into depression and then he was medicated. And then something happened that I have never seen in a person. I've never told this, but I went to a show. We were 3 magicians. One of them was him. We were taping one thing for TV. And we were in the dressing room, the 3 of us, and he was looking at the wall in a corner. Mm-hmm. It was like something, we didn't know what was going on. And we went on stage, he was no energy. Mm-hmm. And when they said, okay, now we shoot, suddenly, boom, he came up, like if you turn on a car.
Uh-huh.
Did a perfect show. Perfect show. The funniest man. And then when they said, cut, boom, again down. It was like a transformation. And then he died soon. He died soon.
Oh.
Yeah. Very, very soon. And it was very impressive for all the magicians in Spain. We love him. His legacy, because he was the funniest man, the greatest man.
Now, when did you first see him live?
I was maybe 18, maybe 16, 17 in Castellón, and I saw him live there.
And well, how big a place?
It was in the outside, in the street, for maybe 3,000, 4,000 people.
Oh,
yeah, he was great. He was great. And then we had Magic Andreu, a comedy magician from Barcelona, very funny. And then we had the ones we saw when we were kids. And then the other things we saw was Copperfield and World Greatest Magic.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. That's when there was a special, we saw your bullet catch there. I think it was there. And David Williams. Bullet catch. Yeah.
Magic bullet. He always corrects.
Magic bullet.
Yeah.
Well, I say bullet catch.
You know why you said that?
No.
Because it's a bullet catch.
Yeah. So that's the things we saw.
Mm-hmm.
And then Juan Tamariz brought to Spain, he did a series of magicians and he brought the Pendragons, Gaetan Bloom, and Mack King. Every magician in Spain loves Mack King because he came to Juan's programs.
Mm-hmm.
So it's when we...
Did Mack perform in English?
Yes, but with some words in Spanish. No, he performed in English, but with some sentences in Spanish. Hola, yo soy Matt King. He was all the time saying that. Yeah. So that were the inspirations we had.
And you saw the magicians and said, that's kind of what I want to do?
It was very strange because after school, before going to the high school, in that year, you don't have to do things on summer. Because when you go in school, you have work to do from one course to the other. And Juan Tamariz put these magazines in the that you could buy, where you buy the newspapers in the kiosk. I don't know how you say.
Kiosk is right.
Kiosk is right. So my parent gave me that, bought me that magazine. Mm-hmm. And that's how it started there.
Did your parents know that you had an interest in...
No.
They just did it.
No, I don't know why.
They're just curious.
I don't really know. So that's how it started, because people now have YouTube.
Right.
You know, we didn't know there were other magicians in the same city. I thought I was the only one in Valencia.
Sure.
For a year, I thought I was the only one. And then I saw a newspaper article of another magician that said he had a magician school. And I called the newspaper, but they didn't want me. I wanted the telephone of that magician. And they said, no, we cannot give it to you. But during 9 months, I called to get the phone. And then they said, okay, this is the phone. And I called him. He was Lesmans, Professor Lesmans. And he opened me his house. And wow. And then I went to magic conventions. We didn't know there were magic conventions. So that's how we started.
Did anyone in your family ever perform?
No, never.
You're the only entertainer?
Yes, more or less, yes.
What did your dad do?
He worked in a bank. Uh-huh. And my mother worked for the state. But no, I don't... And I was very shy. I'm very shy now, but I was very shy then. I didn't speak in public. So and then I saw...
Did you behave in class, or did you ever get sent to the office for being too...
No, I was a very good student. Not in university, but... but before that. School and high school, very good. And in those magazines, there I saw Juan doing the invisible deck. Oh. And the triple coincidence. And I said, I want to know how that's done. And that was the point, seeing those effects. It was like, I want to do that. So that's how...
Those are the first tricks you did?
No, I bought all the magazines thinking he would show how to do those tricks, but he didn't show them. And the first trick I did is one I invented. I thought I had invented. It was the a card stab. Huh? But through the deck, I mean, the cards were not in an envelope. They were not on the table. They got a card, they signed it, and they put it inside the deck, and I went through the deck. And when I saw Juan Tamariz for the first time in Barcelona in 93, it was in a hotel, in an elevator. And I did this trick for him. Mm-hmm. So I have Juan's Tamariz card with a hole because and he was there watching a kid doing a whole show for him, saying, ha 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 ha, oh, very nice, very, oh, how. And then I was the happiest man alive because I had fooled Juan Tamariz. That's what I thought. Yes. Wow.
When did you feel like your relationship changed from like student and admirer? Because you keep bringing up like, and then I was in this show with this guy, and then I was in the show, and then I was hanging out with Juan. At what point do you feel like you become one of the guys who are the performers, are the magic guys?
I never thought I would perform. I didn't do it to perform. I didn't never thought I would be on TV or here in Vegas or meet you. It's impossible. And maybe that's why I'm here, because I love the process, the magic. I never thought I would even perform in front of people. But they started, oh, you're a magician, or come to this, my kid's party. So that's how I started doing these stupid things. And then in the year 98, I started having other ideas because there I only did kids' parties that I didn't enjoy. But we had money. I had money. But I have crazy ideas or different ideas that you could not do for kids. And I remember a friend telling him, but why do you want to do these ideas? Because you cannot do them for kids. And then I said, that's why. Because I don't want to do them for kids. So in 98, it was when my mind changed in a different direction. It's I could be getting easy money. That's the kids' shows, because you have a lot. Or start losing money and investing in other stupid things. And that's how I think those years.
When do you first do a show for adults?
I don't remember, because I did that. I don't remember. I don't know. It's been like it has been a process. You know, it's not that date that you do the show, because in the comedy circle, in the magic circle there, I started doing some bits, some things.
But you actually did more as a comedy writer than as a magician, right? I mean, didn't you?
Yeah, but I was magician first and did only cards. I did all the magic competitions. I won some prizes, so they started knowing me, magicians. I went for some conventions. And I did comedy, magic. But when I entered El Hormiguero, for example, or Nada Por Aquí, I did magic, 3 seasons of magic. But then when I went to the Anthill, El Hormiguero, I didn't do magic at the beginning. I was writing.
And how'd you get that gig as a writer? Because he was the writer on The Tonight Show.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
It was very strange. I love stand-up. I perform stand-up. But in Spain, I couldn't find anything about stand-up magic. No books. So I started buying them.
Stand-up magic or stand-up comedy?
Stand-up comedy. Sorry, stand-up comedy. I started buying them by eBay because Amazon was not at that time. And I bought a book that changed my life. It's Judy Carter's Stand-Up Comedy, the book. I don't know if you have known it. For me, it's the best book ever written of stand-up comedy. And there was because I wanted to know how to write jokes. I did jokes, but I didn't know how
Drew Carey got a book on how to write jokes.
Ah.
And learn from a book how to write jokes. I think it was that book.
Yeah.
This book is the best. And I wanted to know how. And this book was incredible because you read things you already knew and you read new things you never had thought of. And there was an exercise that said, you need to create muscle, the habit of writing. So the joke is set up punchline. So every day get the setups will be the news, the headlines of the news, and you put the punchlines. Okay? So I said, I'm going to do this exercise 30 days, 20 jokes a day.
Yeah.
So I did in a month 600 jokes. And it was very hard because I didn't know, but then it was pretty good. And something funny happened. At that time, I was doing magic in pubs or small clubs, you know, and a friend brought the host of what was going to be the Hormiguero, brought it to this place. And it was a horrible show. Horrible show. It's probably my worst show ever. The bad audience, hecklers, I did a bad show. But the host, Pablo, he loved me fighting. Because he loved that I fought until the end.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's what I
always... David Spade, they started liking him at the LA comedy clubs, even when he was bad, but they said that he was so funny when he was bombing. Like, when he was commenting on his terrible jokes and stuff like that, comedians just loved that.
I know I'm doing a bad show, but I continue until the end. Normally it doesn't go better. Sometimes a little. But I don't say, okay, I fight. And he loved that and we started doing things. But because it's two stories that interconnect. And the late show in Spain was Buenafuente. Buenafuente is a very good comedian. He was the host, like Johnny Carson. Mm-hmm. And they were looking for someone to write one-liners of the news. Mm-hmm. So they called Pablo, and he said, I don't have a writer, but I know this guy, me, that is writing jokes and sending them to me, because I wrote the jokes and sent them to Pablo, and he was on the radio, and some of them he said them on the radio. And he said, well, he's doing them for because he wants. So they called me, Buenafuente, and I said, okay, tomorrow I send you jokes. And I had 600 jokes. Yeah, that's the book. That's the book.
Yeah. That's the Ready book. Rich just put this in my hand. Wow. Judy Garter's Stand-Up Comedy, the book. How to Tell If You're Funny, Take the Funny Test. How to Turn Off Your Anxieties into a Killer Act. How to Make Sense of Humor Pay Off. Plus, Secrets from the Stars of Comedy.
Wow, that's the book change. So they called me and I say, okay, sure, tomorrow I send you jokes. So from the 600 jokes I had, I got the best 67 jokes. Mm-hmm. Or the only jokes, good jokes. Mm-hmm. And I send them next morning. So when they receive the material, they say, wow, this is great. He did this in one night. So they booked me.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
they booked me. And I was 1 year writing for this late night. And then the Hormiguero started. And I went to the Hormiguero.
And you just walked into the writer's room?
Yes. Yes. That's it. But they...
How many writers were on the show?
I don't know, 12 men. Because
Were you confident? Were you like, great, I got hired, I can do this? Or were you like...
No, never. I'm not even in full as confident. There's a line, I'm always on the line, you know? I don't know which side of the line I am. I always do things I don't know how to do. Mm-hmm. That's what I do.
Yeah. Well, that's what they'll find is one of the big indicators of success, is getting out of that,
that
comfort zone.
So sometimes I don't know. So I just do it.
And when you get 12, now when you write when you're writing for Letterman, I've known a lot of people that write for Letterman. They would write. I mean, this is back 30 years ago. They would write 100 jokes a day. Mm-hmm. Always had to turn in 100 jokes. And out of that, Letterman would maybe do 2 or 3.
Yeah.
What was your ratio? About the same on that?
Look, when I was in Buenafuente, like Johnny Carson, mm-hmm. 1 year, it was horrible because I was the only writer at home. The others were there.
Oh, you didn't go into the office?
That the first year with Buenafuente, no. So I wrote and sent. And then saw the program, no jokes.
Oh.
The next day, no jokes. The next day, one joke. So I thought during a whole year they were going to fire me. Mm-hmm. Because so I called and say, is something wrong? You are not doing my jokes. Oh no, we love them. We love them. Then why don't you say them? So so I spent, and then in the 3 months, I was 3 months, they say it was a 3 months period, and then if you do it well, a whole year.
Yep.
They called me and I sure thought they were firing me. Mm-hmm. And they said, we want you to continue and we are going to pay you the double.
There you go.
Wow.
Yeah.
So they're not using your jokes, but they like having them around.
No, because, and then someday 2 jokes, someday 3 jokes. I don't.
Well, that's the thing, Matt. That's the thing that's so mind-blowing about shows like Letterman.
Yeah.
You write 100 a day and the most successful guy's getting 3 on.
Yes. So...
No one gets more than 3.
No, I know. Years ago, I was very lucky. Lisa Lampanelli mm-hmm. hired me to go through a whole act. And I wrote, I think, 80 jokes. And she used 6 and said I did an amazing job.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but you go down psychologically.
Yeah.
Because it's...
It's still failure.
Yeah. It's you write jokes for the bin. You write mm-hmm. a joke and you throw it. Directly, you don't know. So that's my feeling since then, that I don't know if I'm doing
and
good
you,
or bad.
Then you moved into the Anthill.
Yes.
But then you were in the writer's room, right?
Yes.
And you were running the writer's room.
I was the script director. I don't know.
Yeah. So you became the guy who approves of other people's jokes.
Yes. But the beginning, we did news and headlines and monologue. And at the beginning, the first years, we had to read them all, select. So we wrote some, but it was not so much writing. It was more...
editing.
Yeah. This yes, this no. And you had to think what would work.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I really do now. Think what will work on TV, on Full House, on whatever, on stage.
How did you judge success on the anthill? As good writing, bad writing, and things that worked, things that didn't work. Was there critics? Was there a live audience? How did it work?
No, it always went well. At the beginning, less, but now it's very successful. The success is, if it's in the air, it's successful. That's what matters. And to choose material, it's what you think will fit in that, because you've seen it. And it's like an instinct. I don't know how to...
Sure. I mean, it's your experience. It's a big mystery for everybody.
Yes.
I mean, Eddie Gorodetsky, I mean, I don't know how you would get a bad joke out of Eddie, but he would write 100 a day and Letterman would turn down 98 of them.
Yeah.
You know.
I don't know, but it happens in magic also.
Sure, yeah. You
think of an idea and then I visualize myself doing it. And that helps me a lot to throw everything.
Well, you know, Woody Allen, who wrote for, Carson, I think. He said that when he started writing for himself, he said that it was a whole different thing. He said he would turn in 50 jokes for Johnny Carson. And out of those 50, maybe one. He was very, very careful with his own stuff. He turned stuff in much quicker for other people. Yeah. So, you know, that Woody Allen nightclub years, that first stand-up record that Woody Allen, before the film director, any of that shit, is an astonishing, astonishing record. Have you ever heard that?
I've bought by eBay at that time many. I don't know which one is the first.
No, there's a record called The Nightclub Years.
No.
That is a compilation two-record set that came out that he is amazing. But you've heard Woody do stand-up.
Yes. And because I collect all the things I found of stand-up. I have, for example, the magazines when Johnny Carson left and there was a battle to see if it was Letterman or Jay Leno.
Yeah.
I have original magazines from those years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I have them. And I bought this. Have you seen this movie, The Late Shift?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I found it and bought it. So I buy every a film on stand-up comedians. So I have there's even a film of Tom Hanks doing stand-up comedy. I have it there with Sally Field. I think.
Oh, yeah.
I have it. So I love that world. I don't know what the question was, but this...
But you answered it fine.
I sound, yes.
Anyway, we're going to talk more to Hondro on the next show, but for right now, that was Penn Sunday School.
That was Penn Sunday School.
Cha-cha-cha. You become naked. What? Now we're going to talk more like how much stand-up you did without magic.
Oh, okay.
We'll talk about that next time.
That was Penn Sunday School.
Decided to learn stand-up there, Matt?
Yeah, I'm just reading a couple of things here. Set up normal, punchline loony. Information, hostile reaction.
And you know we love you. Hey, Matt Donald, you have anybody to thank?
I do. I want to thank the people who support us over at patreon.com. In fact, these people are at a higher tier and get signed postcards from Penn every month.
I do those.
Yeah.
And what that thing is you see underneath my name, that's a peace sign. Because sometimes you can't tell.
These people are Will Jason. It's a callback to one of our Gilbert episodes. David, I want to finger your cunt Brenner. Omar Rivera. Mason Gooch. Sage Brush. Luke Mellon. Eileen Hunter. Jason Andrew Davidson. Peter B. Clark. Matt Williams. Tom Boner Office McQueen. Soapy Fresh. Dan Griffith. Brad Sherlag. Mike Kavanaugh. Rafiki. Steve Feldman. Jonathan P. And NewRuleFX.com.
Thank you.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.